Hey, everybody. Welcome to Course in Miracles.
Welcome to you, too.
Is that the Aurora Borealis behind you?
That is from the imagination of the young minds at Meta, formerly Facebook.
Ah.
They illustrated this virtual scene in my VR headset. And I found a way to take pictures from inside VR. And so if you can imagine, everything you can see in this room, I can walk in, look at the books on the shelf. I can go over here and walk among these chairs. Everything is rendered in 3D space. I can pick up this little airplane here. If it's programmed that I can grab it, I can pick it up. And it's VR, virtual reality, has really advanced, and it's just begun.
My grandson was working for a virtual reality company in San Francisco for a short while, working on games that way you could do that kind of thing.
Reality Labs?
Yeah. Something, I don't know what they're called, but I know it was virtual reality. Of
That's the big one. That's the big one.
Is it in San Francisco?
Yep. Burlingame, actually.
Is there, his job was in San Francisco.
Could be, yeah.
Okay, where are we tonight?
Okay, so...
sitting in our seats, listening to you.
Welcome again to Course in Miracles. We are going to explore a metaphysical imperative, a metaphysical barrier, or maybe what you would call, maybe even it's like a wall. Something that seems natural and unmovable. It is in between you and your awakening or your freedom, your spiritual awareness of oneness and acceptance of your identity as an extension of God instead of the ego. A Course in Miracles could be described as a psychological journey to a spiritual awakening. It has 500,000 words in it, ostensibly written to your ego, or certainly to the domain where your ego exists. So this book is rich, if you'll take it, with invitations to awaken to the blocks that your ego exists by, the blocks to the awareness of love's presence everywhere. Tonight we're going to look very specific. We're starting a new section tonight, and it's wonderful. You know, this is practical spiritual path advice so that you could kind of catch yourself. You might even gain an understanding of why sometimes you're able to be happy and other times you're not. This could give you basic fundamental insight into the body mind, the separate mind which is in your way. You don't need insights to the spirit mind. They're nice and they're beautiful. And we do talk about them. What you really need to do is to understand what you're believing in that's blocking you. You do not need to believe in love. It is true, see? Love is true, therefore it does not disappear. But the blocks that you've put in between yourself and love that seem as real, even stronger than love, right? Because they make you unhappy. Those blocks need to be seen. Those that you catch your stinking thinking. This is the idea. And you stop thinking of the falsity. And if you just for a moment could be still that way, then you're in truth. You don't go get the truth. It gets you because it's already got you. You don't know it, and you're not behaving that way. this wonderful section tonight is just like a counseling session from Jesus. Bust your ego. So what we're going to do again. It's another twist, though. Another gift from A Course in Miracles coming your way. Wonderful. Everybody turn to page 478 in the text. Section 5, Weakness and Defensiveness. Luann, when you get there, would you please start for us, paragraph 1? We're going to read this whole section to each other.
How does one overcome illusions? Surely not by force or anger, nor by opposing them in any way. Merely by letting reason tell you that they contradict reality. They go against what must be true. The opposition comes from them and not reality. Reality opposes nothing. What merely is needs no defense.
You kind of have to put what merely is.
Oh, is, okay.
And then you could put a colon there.
Okay. What merely is needs no defense and offers none. Only illusions need defense because of weakness, and how can it be difficult to walk the way of truth when only weakness interferes? That's like implying we should be there by now, guys. You are the strong one in this seeming conflict, and you need no defense. Everything that needs defense you do not want for, anything that needs defense will weaken you.
Wow. Tim, would you get for us paragraph 2? I got.
Excuse
you.
Me. What page are we on?
We are now on page 479 in the text.
Okay. I was on the wrong page.
Oh, okay. But don't worry, XL, because we're going to go back and study in depth that first paragraph.
Consider what the ego wants defenses for. Always to justify what goes against the truth, flies in the face of reason, and makes no sense. Can this be justified? What can this be except an invitation to insanity, to save you from the truth? And what would you be saved from but what you fear? Belief in sin needs great defense. And at an enormous cost. All that the Holy Spirit offers must be defended against and sacrificed. For sin is carved into a block out of your peace and laid between you and its return.
XL, would you unmute yourself and read for us paragraph 3?
Yes. Yet how can peace be so fragmented? It is still whole and nothing has been taken from it. See how the means and the material of evil dreams are nothing. In truth, you and your brother stand together with nothing in between. God holds your hands, and what can separate whom he has joined as one with him? It is your father whom you would defend against, yet it remains impossible to keep love out. God rests with you in quiet, undefended, and wholly undefending. For in this quiet state alone is strength and power. Here can no weakness enter, for here is no attack, and therefore no illusions. Love rests in certainty. Only uncertainty can be defensive. And all uncertainty is doubt about yourself.
Thank you. And Don, would you give us paragraph 4?
How weak is fear? How little and how meaningless? How insignificant before the quiet strength of those whom love has joined? This is your enemy, in quotes, a frightened mouse that would attack the universe. How likely is it that it will succeed? Can it be difficult to disregard its feeble squeaks that tell you of its omnipotence and would drown out the hymn of praise to its creator that every heart throughout the universe forever sings as one? What is this? What is the stronger? Is it this tiny mouse or everything that God created? You and your brother are not joined together by this mouse, but by the will of God. And can a mouse betray whom God has joined?
Luann, number 5, please.
If you but recognized how little stands between you and your awareness of your union with your brother, be not deceived by the illusions it presents of size and thickness, weight, solidity, and firmness of foundation. Yes, to the body's eyes, it looks like an enormous solid body, immovable as is a mountain. Yet within you is a force that no illusions can resist. The body only seems to be immovable. This force is irresistible in truth. What then must happen when they come together? And the illusion of immovability.
Easy for you to say.
Immovability be long defended from what is quietly passed through and gone beyond. And the illusion of immovability.
Number 6. What's that, Luann?
Never mind. I was just rereading it for myself.
Trying to say immovability.
Yeah, that one.
Tim, number 6.
Forget not. When you feel the need arise to be defensive about anything.
Anything!
You have identified yourself with an illusion. And therefore feel that you are weak because you are alone. This is the cost of all illusions. Not one but rests on the belief that you are separate. Not one does not seem to stand heavy and solid and immovable between you and your brother. And not one that truth cannot pass over lately, and so easily that you must be convinced, in spite of what you thought it was, that it is nothing. If you forgive your brother, this must happen. For it is your unwillingness to overlook what seems to stand between you and your brother that makes it look impenetrable and defends the illusion of its immovability.
Thank you. Okay, so he's laid something out for us. That's a true gift on busting your ego and your spiritual path, navigating your spiritual path, empowering you to navigate your spiritual path. Let's look in a little deeper. Back to 478, please. The title is Weakness and Defensiveness. In other words, how weak is defensiveness? Okay, let's dig in. All right, so how does one overcome illusions? You got to realize that if you see or believe in illusion, it's real for you. And unless you have a discipline of mind to see the bigger picture, the illusion will persist. For example, the sun comes up in the east, goes overhead, and then the sun moves its way across the sky and sets in the west, and then it's gone. To go around the world, this is the illusion. But you know from your science classes, the sun's not moving, the earth is spinning, and it makes it look like the sun is moving across the sky. Right? Right? Despite the appearance. So it's an illusion that the sun travels across the sky. The sun does, there is, and the earth is, and you are, but your orientations are not as they appear to be. So it is a mistake. It would take vigilance to keep remembering that the earth is spinning. And did you know that the earth is spinning right now? You in your chair, you're moving at 1,000 miles an hour. It's 24,000 miles around, and it takes one day, 24 hours to go 24,000 miles. That's 1,000 miles an hour for you to come back to this spot tomorrow evening. Right? Relatively speaking, the more you think about that, the more you'll never forget that the earth is spinning and the sun is not. You know, the sun is still in the sky. Luann, hang on a second. I'll get your mute.
I just had a funny thought. It would be so much faster if they'd send a missile up in the sky and bring it back down from Sunnyvale to Washington, D.C. What would it only be seconds?
Yeah, except when the missile takes off, it's going 1,000 miles in the wrong direction just already.
Okay, well, probably.
It's going the wrong way.
Well, 1,000 miles from now, then. Where's the place that's 1,000 miles from here?
So I had another little kind of mind trip. I was going, so if you have a jet airplane and you fly in the direction, you're in San Francisco and you fly in the direction that the earth is spinning,
mm-hmm.
and you go around and you land in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and let's say it takes, who knows, I don't know how much time it would take,
mm-hmm.
let's say 24 hours. Mm-hmm. But if you then took off from San Francisco and flew in the opposite direction of the earth mm-hmm. spinning.
Yep.
And got back to San Francisco, would you get there? Would the time it took be less?
No.
More?
No. Identical.
Identical.
The only difference would be jet streams in our case. You don't let that throw you off. It's a different discussion. The reason why it's exactly the same is because when you take off in San Francisco and you're going to New York and the earth is spinning against you, you're going negative 1,000 miles an hour. So you have to overcome, right? New York is coming at you at 1,000 miles an hour. So the two of you, the airplane in New York are going like this right around the planet, see? And you're relative to New York, you're going the same speed all the time. Relative to New York, you're going the same speed all the time. However, the Earth, relative to its core, or relative to the sun, is moving 1,000 miles an hour in a circle. But you're attached and you're going the same 1,000 miles an hour. But the more you think of that, see, the more you will start to accept the truth that the earth is spinning, because you know this from science class, but you don't think about it much. But now we are. A little discussion of the airplane and everything. Everything is relative to each other, spinning around. And now you sort of remember that the sun is sitting out there as a solid state, as a fixed object, and the earth is spinning. Now you've kind of have a little awakening, a realization, again, right, perhaps, that it's the earth is moving, not the sun. And that empowers you now. Because if you were to get involved in any more science, like the discussion we just had about the airplane, you would be in truth. You'd be able to discuss it with reason, which we just studied the entire previous section. It's reasonable that the jet flying either east or west has no advantage from the spinning of the earth, because the jet's spinning along with the earth and the target is spinning the same as the earth. And you think about that for a while, you'll say it doesn't matter, the spin doesn't matter, because you're on the same reference point. But when it comes to going out to the sun and back, you better time your visit because the earth could be pointed the wrong direction when you return. Earth could be pointing the, you know, your California could be pointing the wrong direction and you have to wait 12 hours for it to come back around. So this is a kind of thing we do with our spiritual study, is that we look at it together. Jesus in the Course in Miracles is here to help us look at the facts. Look at the facts of in this case, the facts of nothing. The facts of your existence in a body as an ego is just not true. It's a fantasy, a picture in your head, and just like the idea that the sun goes over the top of your house every day and your house is staying still. That's a fantasy in your head, and you know that's what happens. You know that that sun goes right over the top. But if you think the sun is moving, you know something that's not true. Our little science discussion tonight, you had an awakening, perhaps.
Andrew, huh? This, I don't know if this is, you just mentioned something about, well, anyway, earlier this evening I was studying, I finally took a look at the Urtext, by the way.
Oh, good.
I was reading just
what a gas.
Miracles, Principle of Miracles.
And then
all the dialogue between Jesus and Ellen and, you know, it's just kind of funny that this ordinary conversation taking place. But what happened for me is that at some point, I don't recall, I had my eyes closed and I was thinking, and suddenly I couldn't remember where I was in space in my house.
Mm.
Like I couldn't even remember if at some point I go, I was trying to think of the various places I sit when I'm studying, and it was very strange that I literally, like, all of a sudden, I don't even know. I think I had to open my eyes to remember. But that's an idea of we're not in our body.
Yeah. That's right. You have a consciousness, or rather an awareness, that it is not in the body. You have an identity, a whole identity, a whole perspective that is not in the body. And your focus has been so determined for such a specific purpose to be separate that you purposely lost your awareness of this identity that is outside. All has an awareness of all.
So in a way, could that like be helpful, you know, the idea of really stepping back, of really observing, like closing your eye. I mean, the idea of watching the body.
Yes.
The idea of, you know, like it seems like that could facilitate.
Yes.
Not just the, well, it isn't imagined, it's imagined, I guess, but not just imagine. I like to imagine watching my thoughts or imagine watching my body. But in that experience, it didn't seem as if I was having to imagine at all. It was like I definitely wondered where my body was.
Yes.
I'm grappling with how to help my practice.
You bet, because what you're let me use a specific word for you, dissociation.
Yeah.
So you're associated with your body most of the time. And you're worried about it, thinking about it, look in the mirror and make sure your hair's right or whatever, all the time. However, with a meditation, with a coming to a real present moment, like so I think occurred to you, you really got between moments, you had an out-of-pattern time interval, which also means you let go of space and of recognition of your body. So your locus was available to be reassigned. So that is a a type of spiritual awakening because you still existed even though you didn't know where you were. So, you know, love that up. Don't try to repeat it. Let it be repeated if it happens, but this is the kind of thing that usually doesn't work well if you try to repeat it. Accept that that was a complete experience. That was a complete experience.
It's interesting that it happened in connection with my reading the Ur-text.
Nice. Well, hey, you know, Jesus loves you, buddy.
Andrew, I think XL wants to talk about something.
Oh, does he? All right. Does she have her hand?
Yes. No, because her screen doesn't have a hand at the bottom.
Oh.
I have a new Zoom set up. I mean, Zoom changed itself, and it's quite different than I...
Well, yeah, you can flag us down, though, with your hands anytime. That would just...
Oh, I was. I was going like this.
Oh, too close. Okay.
You just put your hand like this, like that, and hold it still.
Yeah, if it's too close, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I just spent several hours today transcribing a video, and I'm okay with Karon J, who is a course teacher, KIRONJ. And she has had a profound effect on me. And when I'm listening to the sessions, it's one thing. But when I transcribe them, I get so much information. Mm. And right now I'm not quite in my head. But one of the things that was one of the participants in this seminar like I said, it's very hard to talk. I'm working when this happens. Mm-hmm. I have a really hard time expressing myself. I'll just say that what I heard, what I got as I transcribed and really listened, is that nothing is real, which I've been hearing about since 1983. Mm. And one of the participants, I think, had an experience of it not being real. Very brief. And so as I was transcribing this, Karon J suggested that we work 24/7. At acknowledging this, nothing is real. And so I took a break from the transcription and I went out to walk a block and a half to the local little market with the intention of knowing I am going to the store and it is not real and what I am buying is not real. And every person I see is my brother. And when I left to go to the store, I was like, okay, I can do that. And I went into the store and I kept it in my mind. I made my purchases. I walked back. I put them down. And then I was exhausted. And I lay down and I remembered about tonight. And I am having such, you know, your discussion about it's, the earth is spinning and the sun is stationary. But it's not real. It's not real. And you're having a really interesting conversation, which I was trying to comprehend because I love this sort of thing. At the same time thinking, but it's not real. It's not real. So I think that right now, during this Zoom session with you, you people who are not real, I am having my first little glimmer of I'm willing to know, to experience this.
Nice.
And it's so just what Don said about dissociation, or you explained it as dissociation. I'm having a real hard time. I want to play solitaire. I don't want to watch this.
Yeah.
Because it's a little too much, but I don't want to miss it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you showed up, because right where you are, I want to offer you a thought.
Hey, what's that?
Store.
I'll take it.
The people. This Zoom session. They appear real. And I want to offer you this discernment. They are real. They're just not true. You know about Mickey Mouse cartoon? You ever seen Steamboat Willie?
No.
Do you ever seen a Mickey Mouse cartoon?
Yeah.
Does he have gloves? Does he wear gloves? You ever seen this? Yeah.
Yeah.
He does. Mickey Mouse is real, but he is not true. He does not survive. He does not actually even exist. And yet he's real because we both know who he is, right? Mickey Mouse, no problem. Axel is like that cartoon. Don, Andrew, other cartoons, more elaborate than the two-dimensional Mickey Mouse. We are real. We are not true. We are not true. Truth is of eternity. The cartoon is not. This way, hopefully, you can find a way not to dismiss the store and your body and your hunger and the course meeting or solitaire. Dismiss it as nothing, because obviously we're talking about it. It's something. But it's not true. It is not the level of spirit. It is the limited level of form. What do you got, Tim?
It's not that nothing exists at all. It's that nothing exists in the way that we perceive it existing. So
yes.
You don't want to imagine walking along a narrow pathway and there's a giant chasm to the left and one to the right. But if you fall off the left side, you're into the world of absolutely nothing exists at all. And then if you fall off the right side, you're in, everything is exactly the way it appears to me to be. That's reality.
And it's all there is.
Right. So the skill is to thread the needle, to go through the middle.
Razor's edge.
The razor's edge there, right. And, to understand the emptiness of things from their own side, you know, I give everything all the qualities and characteristics it has for me. You know, that's a good understanding of emptiness, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. The reason why the discussion that it's not real, those words come up, the purpose is not to dismiss your perceptions. It's to allow you to disconnect from them being your identity.
Right.
We do not need to erase Mickey Mouse. We just need to remember that he's a cartoon. Oh, okay, no big deal. Somebody draws a cartoon of Mickey Mouse and he's injured. A terrible injury. He's in the hospital and the doctors are shaking their head and they're holding their chins and their arms and they're shaking their heads. This is not a loss because he's a cartoon. Your miracle is a shift in perception about Mickey Mouse not actually being alive. You don't have to erase Mickey Mouse. In fact, you can enjoy Mickey Mouse. You can draw him now riding a horse the next day. And look, he can do a Gymkhana. The same with the idea of XL. It's a thought. It's an idea. You must learn in your spiritual path to know that this is not your true identity. You cannot actually be XL. You can visit XL. You can dream of XL. You cannot be XL. And the store as well does not last forever. It is recycled from all sorts of other things that were there before. It's not true. Truth is a matter of absolute and eternity. Nothing here is nothing, not zero. Nothing here is true. It all comes and goes,
right,
just like a night's dream. Yes, Don.
So, I, as I am a thought of God. But I, as a projection of a body and appearance and all that, and others' idea of me as their projection is not real.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seen as the thought of God, and I don't recognize myself as the thought of God.
Yes.
And there's that Bible thing about being made in the image of God.
Yeah.
And I think, of course, image is, again, one of those tricky things because there's no image, right?
Right.
But it's the idea. And then, but before that, I was thinking, and by the way, I want to roll that out, my thinking is, has some clarity to it. Okay. And then the other thing I was thinking about was false teachers of God. You know, there's be a lot of false teachers of God.
Yes.
And of course, I've always thought of that as a person who's acting as a teacher of information and concepts and spiritual ideas, a body. But the reality is we're all false teachers of God from the egoic point of view. And so when you're watching TV, it's like my wife loves this program called The View. There's these women all pretty made up, you know, and blah, 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 blah. And different, you know, Whoopi Goldberg is one of them. Most of us probably have heard of her. But there's others that aren't so notable. But they're just talking with their, you know, their points of view and their understandings. And it's just like, not only it's like you have to hold it as dubious, but they are talking over each other. It's like crazy. It's like absolutely.
And they're having a blast.
They're having a great time. And I go, God, I think I'd like to live life like that. Just, you know, just forget it all. Just blabber, you know. And sometimes I have a special friend that I can do that with. But still, we're supposedly seeking the truth. But in any event,
it wouldn't work for you, Don, because my meaningless thoughts are showing me a meaningless world, and a meaningless world engenders fear. This is the truth when you start to wake up.
It's true as well that once you've started down this path, there's no turning around and going back. You can make the effort. You can say, oh, I missed the days of ignorance and, you know, ha-ha. But good luck. And all I can say is try it. For yourself, you know, to see what happens.
Well, in this, okay,
yeah, you'll discover that this is it for you. You nothing else will satisfy after this.
Yes, you've already. Well,
I think I'm in that stage where yeah, the illusion does not satisfy, but unfortunately, I'm not getting the sustenance of the real.
Yeah.
Good. So I'm in the desert.
That's a desert. The dark night of the soul.
I've been there for 40 fucking years.
Time is not an issue. You would hope for it to be quicker than slower, but you would not be in the dark night of the soul for 40 years. You would be a seeker for 40 years, but you're approaching the dark night of the soul, which is when it comes, when it actually comes and passes, and it does. It comes and passes. The certainty is, and actually, I don't know how it could last a long time. So I take that back. You know, how long would it pass? I have no clue. There's no need for it to have a passage except for your willingness to move on. So I take that back. But what it is where you're certain that the answer is not in form and space and time. It's not in bodies. It's not in the world. You're certain that the happiness is not there. You think happiness must be of something beyond the world. Like we'll call it God for as a shorthand word. But you don't know what God is. Never seen him. Never seen it. You have no idea how to reach God. You just know that God is not the sum total of nature. There's something more than that. And so this is where, when you enter that, when you actually honestly enter that, you release having all the answers come from the ego, the world. But it's not depressing, it's happy, because you know you're going the right direction. You just by letting go of the disastrous chaos of trying to get happiness from a world designed on unhappiness, limit and death. Just because you gave that up, that feels good. And for 40 years, you would feel that much better. Even though you feel desperate because you don't know what the hell, where's the happiness? But it sure is better than trying to continue in what you know is unhappiness. You see? Perhaps you're there. You should be. I think you are. Now, let's for Dawn, you asked some really good stuff. So I want to show you a paragraph that would be Jesus commenting on your comment. And I'll also have an Andrew comment on your comment, which is the I, the word I you used, and you said you got a concept of I that is an extension of God, which is true, but then there's the I that is the separate defending ego, struggling ego, also called I. So you may converge on that one word, it's only one letter. You may converge on that one word, I. And now, hold in your mind that that one word is either the very greatest single thought you can have, or it is a puny, pathetic, small, infinitesimally meaningless thought that you can have.
Squeaky mouse.
That one utterance, I. Are you with me? So you, my friend, have come to a fork in the road. And you beautifully illustrated it. It can lead you to a holy instant of eternity and infinity, or it can ground you back into darkness and smallness. The same word. The difference, of course, is whether you're approaching it with the Holy Spirit or with the unholy spirit. Each is equally powerful. Equally powerful. Your mind has the ability now to follow the ego and stay in darkness for as long as you wish. And God can't do anything about it. Doesn't have that kind of power. Wouldn't. But you do. And when you're willing to let go of the meaningless chaos and the hopes of the world, instantly you start to discover a lightness of being, even here in the dream. Perhaps like remembering, oh yeah, the earth is spinning. That's right. I like the truth. And it just feels right because it's true. And so you go, one awakening after another, one workbook lesson after another, continuing to free your mind, continuing to get the self-empowerment of having less ego and more peace and then more happiness and then more joy and then a sense of eternity and bliss. But remember, as long as you're in a body, some of the highest thoughts you can have is to recognize, as Excel was doing, that what you're looking at is actually nothing. It has an appearance of something. It's actually Nothing.
Yeah.
So, Dawn, go to page 339 in the workbook. Everybody, go to 339 in the workbook to wonderful lesson 182 and look at Jesus weighing in on what Dawn just said. Dawn was saying, he says, you know, and Axel was saying too. She was saying, I think it's right that this world's nothing. She felt a sense of rightness and purpose enough that she decided to take it all the way for a whole day. And gosh, she walked down the street holding this idea of emptiness in direct competition with her perception, with her eyeballs. So lesson 182 rolls around one day, and you're just ecstatic that this is in your book. Ecstatic. So Dawn, read for us paragraph 1, lesson 182.
I will be still an instant and go home.
And go home. That's like the crossing the desert. How do you cross the desert? How do you awaken in heaven? How do you get out of the dark night of the soul? You manage to be still an instant. Tim, why does it say instant and not like a week?
Because when you experience that awareness, that knowing of having left behind duality and perception and become aware of your oneness with God and everything else as well, that's outside of time.
Beautiful.
It's got nothing to do with time or space.
Yep.
Those things change. If they change, they're in the world of perception, and they're illusionary.
It's outside of beautiful. Well done. It's outside of time. It's complete in an instant. You may go back in time and try to talk about it and think about it and say, oh, yeah, I had this instant last Tuesday between 12 and 12:15. Not sure when, but oh, you know. You can try to circle it with time and space. But the fact is, your freedom and your true identity is outside of time. Remember, eternity means there is no time. The ego says eternity means there's a lot of time, and it never ends. It just keeps coming and coming and coming, right? That's the ego's definition of eternity. Course in Miracles definition of eternity, and a true definition of eternity, it means there is no time. It is infinite. Non-linear.
Yeah, there's a wonderful line in the Course that says, in fact, we're standing with the Holy Spirit outside of time, looking back on the whole reel of our life, you know,
yes.
The movie.
Yes.
From its ending, you know.
Yes.
And the illusion is, oh, I am embedded in time, and this is how it's happening, and it's outside of my control, and blah, blah, blah. And the reality is much more, you're just reviewing something that took place a long time ago. And
it's redreaming it.
You're dreaming it, right.
And again.
Soon the dream will begin to fade, and then finally you probably won't remember it all anymore. It serves no function. It goes away.
Yes, it would be as important to you as the dream you had last Tuesday at 3 a.m.
Right.
Because reality, your awakened life, has replaced those fantasy thoughts you had last Tuesday night when you were sleeping.
When I was imagining I was Mickey Mouse with a horrible injury, right?
So, exactly. Seems so important at the time. But yeah. Your miracle was that it's just a cartoon. And you know what? Somebody could draw him tomorrow on a horse. It's no big deal. Dawn, would you please start over and read for us?
I will be still an instant and go home. This world you seem to live in is not home to you. And somewhere in your mind, you know that this is true. A memory of a home keeps haunting you. Let me say that again. A memory of home keeps haunting you, as if there were a place that called you to return. Although you do not recognize the voice, nor what it is the voice reminds you of, yet still you feel an alien here, from somewhere all unknown. Nothing so definite that you could say with certainty you are an exile here. Just a persistent feeling, sometimes not more than a tiny throb, at other times hardly remembered, actively dismissed, but surely to return to mind again. A persistent feeling that returns to mind again.
Yes. Tim, would you please read that same paragraph?
I'm sorry, which lesson one?
It's lesson 182, okay. Paragraph 1. And Cecilia, do you have your book tonight? Are you reading?
Sure, I can read.
Oh, yeah, would you read it for us?
Paragraph 2.
Paragraph 1. We'll have Tim read paragraph 2 in a minute.
Okay.
It's paragraph 1.
This is very close to my heart, this paragraph.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. This world you seem to live in is not home to you. And somewhere in your mind you know that this is true. A memory of home keeps haunting you, as if there were a place that called you to return. Although you do not recognize the voice, nor what it is the voice reminds you of. Yet, still you feel an alien here, from somewhere all unknown. Nothing so definite that you could say with certainty you are an exile here. Just a persistent feeling, sometimes not more than a tiny throb, at other times hardly remembered, actively dismissed, but surely to return to mind again and again.
Excel, are you reading or are you making dinner?
I'm doing both.
Okay, would you read first paragraph 2? Tim, you'll do 3.
Okay.
No one but knows whereof we speak, yet some try to put by their suffering in games they play to occupy their time and keep their sadness from them. Others will deny that they are sad and do not recognize their tears at all. Still, others will maintain that what we speak of is illusion, not to be considered more than but a dream. Yet who, in simple honesty, without defensiveness and self-deception, would deny he understands the words we speak?
And Tim hit us with number 3.
We speak today for everyone who walks this world, for he is not at home. He goes uncertainly about in endless search, seeking in darkness what he cannot find, not recognizing what it is he seeks. 1,000 homes he makes, yet none contents his restless mind. He does not understand. He builds in vain. The home he seeks cannot be made by him. There is no substitute for heaven. All he ever made was hell.
Mickey Mouse will never be alive. There's no substitute for life. There's no substitute for spirit and being an extension of God as a co-creator. That's what you really are. You're not this little body, you know, a little meat sack stuck on planet Earth. Cecilia, did you want to share with us about paragraph 1, how that touched you a bit?
Well, I just feel like, it touches me because I feel that way. You know, that's how
Amen,
it
sister.
Is for me. And, yeah. You know, having, and there are times when I feel, yes, you know, I am home. Maybe once in my life I was truly there, you know, in that space that there's, in that place minus time and space. you know, but it's always, and then there are times that it's, it may not be so strong, you know, but I feel like, oh, okay, I'm in the moment and I'm present. But, you know, there's always a longing, I would say. And then I have to, there's definitely always a longing to be home, and then also knowing that, you know, I can always be there in the present.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in the way that is, you know, minus time and space. I mean, that's a very special place to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting where it says just a persistent feeling, sometimes not more than a tiny throb, at other times hardly remembered, actively dismissed, but surely to return. And it's like that sometimes, you know, it's like a little tiny reminder. And then there are times that it's such a strong longing. So it's been like that all my life, pretty much, you know? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah. Let's look at another one paragraph, the opening of another lesson that kind of hints at this as well. Turn back about 30 pages or so to lesson 155. This is page 291. And so, Don, would you read the first paragraph of 291?
Give me that page number again, please. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the workbook now, page 291.
Yeah. I was trying to take a note.
Sure.
Okay. Paragraph 1. On 291, I will step back and let him lead the way. There is a way of living in the world that is not here, although it seems to be. You do not change appearance, though you smile more frequently. Your forehead is serene, your eyes are quiet, and the only one, and the ones who walk the world as you do, recognize their own. Yet those who have not yet perceived the way will recognize you also and believe that you are like them as you were before.
Yes.
You know, I will step back and let him lead the way. That's one thing reading the urtext started helped, was it helped make the idea of Jesus real.
Yeah.
And that Jesus actually has a voice in my mind. I guess the Holy Spirit, it's a little vague for me, the distinctions, but, and that I could be led really in very specifics in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got there in my previous experiences of hearing what seemed to be spiritual guidance from within, mm-hmm. the specifics, more generalizations, if you will.
Yeah.
But I sure would like that. And I think, you know, that because I've taught myself so poorly and have such a depressive kind of habitual mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find any water in this desert, you know?
Yeah.
And I need, it feels like I'm desperate to have that kind of sense of intimacy.
Yeah.
That I think would be nurturing and kind of calming.
Yeah.
You know,
you see, the Course actually mentions desert. You know, it mentions the word desert. And he says, when you find yourself in the desert, the only thing to do is to leave the desert.
You know, I want to say, interject here, something that came up. What I'm realizing, you know, Jesus does talk about the intimacy of words, that words have an intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I have developed a quote-unquote love of my words.
Mm-hmm.
And I worship them,
mm-hmm.
my ideas. And so what I have noticed is how furious I can feel when I'm not being listened to. And I don't mean agreed with.
Mm-hmm.
I just mean listened to.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to not be so infatuated with my ideas.
Yeah.
Because it's very, they give me great, like, a sense of false security.
Especially if you think your ideas need to be heard by somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like that other individual is robbing me of an intimate experience, of a sense of feeling alive, a real. Huh. Interesting.
You got to bust your ego. Because yep. You're looking at the mirror for validation that you exist.
Yeah.
What do you got, Tim?
Don, I would add, it's not the other person stealing from you, because that makes us victim. In fact, it's us choosing to give up our power to this other seeming individual, to this situation. And we have all the power in the world to call it back again. And that person who's not listening to you or giving you what you need becomes Mickey Mouse, you know. So it's the ball's in your court. The power's in you.
Mm-hmm. I need an intimate communication internally.
Yes. And when you mentioned to me just now, reading the text allowed you got a hit that this Jesus character, whatever Jesus is, exists. It's very convincing. Reading the text and those personal dialogues, and then going back and reading your Course in Miracles, do you recognize it's the exact same script, just 48,000 words fewer? It's the same dialogue. This is so personal. These words are so beautiful. And the fact that 60% of it's written in iambic pentameter is just inhuman, but exists.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it Jesus. It's the part of your mind that has awoken to Holy Spirit and is manifesting Holy Spirit now, like a bodhisattva would, to bring now the blessing back to the lost sheep. Jesus serves that word, that idea, serves that purpose, that's mind reaching back to collect and wake up the rest of itself.
Okay, yeah.
What a loving thought.
It's kind of revivifying the Course in Miracles, in a sense. It's like my mind had become a little inured.
Naturally.
And this is kind of like, no, you know, it's really real. It's really personal.
Have you been studying 4 or 5 years now?
I've been studying decades.
Well, you haven't been serious about it, because my experience is that at year 4, people fall in a hole with Course in Miracles, or 5, and they think, you know, I've been around it and around it, and I'm not getting anywhere. I got to find another book. It's not working for me. And then they put it down. And they may put it down for a long time, or maybe just put it down for a short time, but they put it down. They kind of give up on it. And then somehow, some way, they put their nose back in it, and they're reborn. You sound like you're reborn a little bit. that the message is reborn anew. It's more serious, more powerful. You're great, more grateful for it because you're allowing Jesus to be the gift of spirit that he is. And this is a gift you're giving yourself right now, right in front of me. I've been there, did it myself. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I just want to encourage you, brother, your journey is continuing. It gets richer and richer from here because you're allowing this author to be an authority. You're trusting Jesus a little more. Not a figment of Helen's imagination.
No.
It's actually an awakened mind. Wow! And now it's so loving, right? Now it's just so beautiful that this even exists at all. What a gift. Yes, you bet. You bet. The Course in Miracles ends with the words, I will not leave you comfortless.
That's what I want, comfort.
Yeah, that's how the book ends. So now text page 478, back to where we were. How does one overcome illusions? Surely not by force or anger, not by opposing them in any way, right? Because what you resist persists. This is a message I want to deliver for sure in the next 15 minutes. It's the burden of this paragraph and this entire section. He's actually laid out for you right there in that sentence, but it's a little hard to see maybe. Sentence two is what I'm talking about. Surely not by force or anger or by opposing the illusions in any way. You see, the world and any negative thought that you can have requires your resistance to it in order for it to exist and have any power. Any negative thought requires your resistance to it in order for it to have power. Do you see the math? I'll say it again. Any negative thought you have requires your resistance to it in order for it to even exist. Do you see the
circle? Can you say that again?
You bet. As many times as needed. I know, it's weird, right? Yeah. Any negative thought you have requires your resistance to it to exist at all. Any negative thought, negative, right? Negative hurts. Isn't negative dark? It hurts. It feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
In order for you to feel bad, you have to resist the thought. That's what makes it bad. Oh, I don't want this. Oh, God, I hope this doesn't come true. Oh, no, 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 no. I hate this. I hate it. You're suffering. Your resistance to it is giving it its power. Do you see the circle? As you give, you receive. What A Course in Miracles says, so you can wake up and choose peace instead of this and actually see the nothing that it is. It's a cartoon. Oh, cartoons don't mean anything. Cartoons can illustrate all sorts of things, but they don't mean anything. There's no truth. Except the meaning I give to them. So from now on, you may go forward in your life and catch any negative thought and realize it only has power because you're resisting it. Not that you should say, welcome negativity. It's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying just don't see the negative as negative.
Would that be true of physical symptoms?
Yes, absolutely. Try it. It's amazing. It's amazing.
So I have pressure right here and feels uncomfortable, painful.
Yeah.
So the way to not resist it,
yes,
is to just look at it without judgment.
Yep.
And without, with, in a way, in a lighthearted way.
In a lighthearted way, in an acceptance, in a embrace that it is and it is normal. It is not that it should, in a way that it should, it's normal. This pressure you have does not need to disappear. Your ego says you can't be happy until it's gone, and then you get a break. And you get to be happy until it comes back. That's your ego.
So that's okay. This is powerful. So on my birthday, I had the experience of every discomfort, including that, disappearing for about 24 hours. Then yesterday, I had this. I've been having really severe headaches, but I had this headache going on. I sat down and I was eating something and I watched a little TV, and all of a sudden, and I was feeling very unhappy, and all of a sudden, it went away, and this sense of happiness came over me. So in a way, it's almost like the ego's playing with me.
Oh, ego's playing with you. The ego, by definition, is playing with you.
And that physical symptom. Yeah, because Jesus does say the body and the ego and the body collaborate.
Yep.
Against you.
Yep, ego first, and then the body is very handy as a way for the ego to manifest in a way that you can't deny. And you just got deeper into the dream. More layers of the onion were formed, and you got deeper into, and then it just seemed to be the truth. You are a body. You are a body, you're not free, and there's no such thing as God, says
he. So even there, when I had that good feeling,
yeah,
rather than judge it as a, I mean, it felt like a physical release. I mean, it really was a physical release and a heart. My heart felt open and I felt happy. But how do I hold that? It didn't seem like resistance. The word resistance applies to it, to that. Yet it is a phenomenon.
It appears to be a phenomenon. It's more like a non-phenomenon for a moment, for a day, that you would release the requirement. And that's why I say the way for you, I believe, is not going to be to do something to try to relieve that pain or any pain, but to undo the resistance to the pain, taking out its power. Same thing you'll do with your entire ego and your anger or your fears or your sense of worthlessness or worthiness or superiority or whatever your hang-up is to not feed it with your thoughts. It's an inside job. You get still, you get present, and you become you have a lightness of being come over you that is no longer following the mandates of the ego separate self. You're just present. You find yourself more able to be available for love and for happiness and for peace. Your body may be in pain. Your body's going to die eventually. It's going to get hungry before it dies. It's going to get tired before it gets hungry. All this is going to regularly happen, but you don't have to give it meaning. Lesson number one. Nothing I see means anything. Footnote to lesson number one. It doesn't mean anything that it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. You're that free. You could be that free with just a thought. Okay, back to 410.
Can I say something, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we say what the ego does. And, you know, I think that the ego just is.
Nice.
Right? I mean, it's always there. It's always present. It's always negative. It's always, you know, victim, you know, playing the victim role, reactive role, whatever. And, you know, I just see it. I mean, now every time that comes up, I see it. And, you know, I always have this image of a boomerang, you know, when you take a boomerang and it's a thought that you throw and it just spins right back.
Nice.
You know, and I just, and it, and that's really obvious to me. And I think that, you know, prayer is really, you know, that's where that the Holy Spirit comes in. And, you know, the readings and the book is just to kind of purify that, you know, so it doesn't come up as often. And, you know, for me, a lot of it is just, well, you know, I want to be able to, like, move forward in my life with true compassion so that I know how to respond to a situation in a very loving and compassionate way, the right way. I mean, you know, that's my challenge. It's like,
yes,
how do I do that? What is the right venue?
Yes.
And then at that point I say, well, you know, that's where I pray. It's like, I don't know, but, you know, hopefully it will come to me and I will.
They're the perfect prayer is worded for you on page 28. It's time to go back and read that. Perfect prayer for you, Cecilia.
Mm-hmm.
Page 28 in the text. You know, how, what are the words that you would use to be able to follow the Holy Spirit instead of the unholy Spirit? How could you get out of your ego when it's go time? When you're back with your students or you're dealing with a loved one or an argument or a...
No, I'm dealing with helping somebody with his dog.
Oh, but still... Still, dogs are people too.
I retired, right? Yeah,
dogs are people too. But you know, it can be confusing. People get really, you know, about their dogs or about anything they're doing in their world. They can get quite upset about it. And so, you're gonna do page 28, and you would counsel. Let this counsel to you. In fact, Cecilia, why don't you read for that, and I'm going to go hang up on this telemarketer.
What is it that you want me to read?
Yeah, read for us. Read for us the italics.
Oh, okay. I am here only to be truly helpful. I am here to represent him who sent me. I do not have to worry about what to say or what to do because he who sent me will direct me. I am content to be wherever he wishes, knowing he goes there with me. I will be healed as I let him teach me to heal.
This is a complete prayer to orient your mind to face the world. Jesus knows that you are fully in the world and believing in the world, and yet you are looking for healing. And he knows that you're faced with literal sickness as well as figurative sickness in your mind, the way you're thinking. And he says, all you need to do is ground yourself and say, well, I'm here in a body in this hospital or with this person and their pet, really here to be truly helpful. Not helpful as much as I can figure it out with my past and my imagining. No. Let me have access to what it means to be truly helpful. It just enlarges your heart instantly, just with that one phrase. And I'm here in this hospital, in this school, in this courtroom, in this body. I'm here, wherever you find yourself, to represent, capital letters, him who sent me. That just gave you a job description. It just gave you a purpose and just gave you a source. You were sent by capital letters. You've been promoted. And now, put the ego aside. I don't have to worry about what to say or what to do because he who sent me will direct me. I'm just going to suit up and show up. And be available to be loving. then be love itself. I'm content to be wherever he wishes, knowing he goes there with me. I won't hesitate. And now the big one.
I'm sorry to interrupt. To say that our function while we seem to be on Earth is the role of healing or healer, and the function in heaven is creation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, your function on Earth is to be corrected from your nightmare of your own making.
Which is a form of healing.
That is the healing.
Yeah.
Yes, and the form of the healing will eventually take a single awakening from being an ego to being infinite spirit, to being a manifestation of God as spirit, not as a body. This is the miracle that is beyond words, the miracle that once that sets in your mind allows you to redefine all your other thoughts in happiness and playfulness. And playfulness. Right now, it's way too serious because you think you are a body and it hurts. Oh, healers, I will be healed. Yeah, go ahead.
Healers need to go to work in hospitals. That's where the sick people are.
You got
to
go where the sick people are. Excellent.
That's here.
That's here.
That's here, baby.
They're all here.
We're all here together.
We found them. Okay, let's go back to 478. I just want to point out a few more things in this paragraph because we're going to move on to the next one next week. Okay, 478, paragraph 1. And we've talked through this pretty nicely to catch the illusory, the illusions. You let them go. I guess we could. Can we have Jesus weigh in on this one more time? Maybe he should close the meeting. I think the rest we got to weakness or fear is strong in the seeming conflict. This one. So go to page. Let me check real quick. I guess we can skip that this time. So beautiful. Yeah, let me just take you to this, the end of the paragraph, and talk about the last few sentences, okay? Defense, okay? You need no defense.
Where are we?
This is on page 479, top of the page.
Okay.
It says, you know, it's number 11, and you need no defense. Everything that needs defense, you do not want. Wow! Look at this metaphysical commentary, a way to sort out the valuable from the valueless. Everything that needs defense, you do not want. A guiding light has been given you. If you find yourself defending it, let it go. The truth is beautiful. The truth is contagious. The truth is powerful. It's like a smile. It's contagious. And it's happy, which is your true resting nature, happy. So if you find yourself defending something, you're probably going into conflict. Let it go.
The image that comes to mind is the Cheshire Cat who slowly disappears except for the grin at the very end. And then even finally that goes and I guess you could call the cat an ascended master at that point or some such term. But, yeah, it's the body disappears, the grin remains.
I like that, Tim. That's absolutely perfect. Because it's the happiness that reminds you of your true nature. And that stays. Because that is your function, is perfect happiness. And your unhappiness is all related to trying to be a body, trying to be separate from love, from happiness itself. So all that remains is the grin. I love it. It's a great, perfect. Thank you, Tim. That ends the meeting. Thank you, everybody, for studying A Course in Miracles with me. Let's do it again next week and continue to to work on this gift from A Course in Miracles. Good to see you, Cecilia.
Nice to see you, too.
Dawn, thank you. Keep it up. The awakening is happening. But not for trying. It's for undoing. Remember, it's an undoing and undoing and undoing.
Okay.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Axel.
Nice to see you.
Thank you, guys.